Welcome to the Back Nine Report, presented by eDraft.com.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of the Back Nine Report, presented by eDraft.com. We go live every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and check in on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, interviews, recaps, previews. Hey, we cover anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres. Every week, I'm alongside my co-host Fred Alvader. And Fred, this week, after 112 years, golf is returning to sports' biggest stage, the Olympics. How are you today?
I'm great, Carlos, and I know this is exactly what you've been waiting for. I know you're excited this week to see golf played in Rio in the Olympics. But you know what? We thought that this last week would be an off week for golf. But, man, what a mistake that was. Jim Furyk made history by firing a 12-under par 58 at the Travelers. Wesley Bryan does not have to pass go. He wins for the third time on the web.com and jumps directly to the PGA Tour. An up-and-coming South Korean 16-year-old, Yoon Jeon Song, won the U.S. Women's Amateur over NCAA champion Virginia Elena Carta. And Joe Durant beat Miguel Angel Jimenez in a playoff at the 3M Championship on the Champions Tour. It was a fantastic weekend of golf, Carlos. Lots to talk about. Let's get to it. Let's go.
Let's go. And, hey, we have a lot to talk about. We have, like you mentioned, this is the week I've been waiting for 7 years, the return of golf to the Olympics for the first time in 112 years. We're going to have the practice range dedicated to it, and we'll tell you everything you need to know about it. We also have a very special guest whose name is Ed Travis. He's a golf writer. He's going to be trying to make some sense of what's going on the golf industry right now, which we're going to start pretty soon with that in the Par 5 News. But like you mentioned as well, we're going to start with the weekend batsman as we usually do. And you have everything about what happened there at the Travelers Championship where Russell Knox won. But it was Jim Furyk who stole the thunder there with that 58 record-breaking score.
Yeah, the biggest storyline at the Travelers was supposed to be that it was the week between the PGA Championship and the Olympics. It was a chance for the big names to take a week off and rest after a torrid summer and prepare for the FedEx Cup. But there was a ton of action in Connecticut, and history was made with Jim Furyk posting the first ever 58 on the PGA Tour. Wasn't it just last week we're talking about a 58 on the web.com tour? Now it happens on the PGA Tour? That's insanity. You know what? And there ended up being several great storylines coming out of Travelers last week. So one of them, Ernie Els won a watch for making an ace on the 16th hole on Saturday. That old boy still's got it going on. Olympians, Patrick Reed, Bubba Watson, and Matt Kuchar missed the opening ceremonies, and they were in the field at the Travelers. Reed finished T11, Kuchar T17, and Bubba was T25. Respectable, but nothing too flashy. Russell Knox, oh yeah, by the way, he won the tournament. He collected his second win of 2016 and moves to number 12 on the European Ryder Cup points list. Darren Clark's job just got a little more difficult. Westwood might be out, Carlos. I don't know. How can he not pick Russell Knox as a captain's pick for that European Ryder Cup team? But the biggest story by far was the 58 posted by Jim Furyk on Sunday. It had Twitter, Facebook, social media was just a fire ablaze, Instagram, the whole thing, it was blowing up. He started the day at one over par at T70 in the 73-man field. He was not happy with how he was playing. He called his dad, talked to him over the phone, sent some video. He never does this. Even sent some video to his father to take a look at. Dad had some sage advice. Whatever he told him, it worked because he said he came out on Sunday, and everything was just perfect. He said it was just automatic. Everything he hit was right at the pin. He moved up. He ended up moving up 65 spots to finish T5, Carlos. The historical round nearly became a footnote in history. I don't know if you know this or not, but his playing partner had entered a wrong score on one hole. But Fury caught it in the scoring tent, made the correction before he signed his card. I bet he's thanking his elementary math teacher right now. So, Jim Furyk, big, big story, unbelievable. Top it all off, it was also announced today that Furyk will be awarded the Payne Stewart Award. As we all know, Stewart was killed in a plane crash in 1999, and the Payne Stewart Award is given annually to a player whose values align with the character, charity, and sportsmanship that Stewart showed. This includes respect for the traditions of the game, commitment to uphold the game's heritage of charitable sport, and professional and meticulous presentation of himself and his sport through his dress and conduct. So, Carlos, big week for Jimmy Furyk. Finally, on the Travelers, Justin Thomas, I mean, he would have been a big story. He shot a 62 on Sunday. He moved up 30 places, ended up with a really nice tournament. But Jim Furyk was the big story. Hey, I got a question for you, Carlos. This is a really good question here. Was Jim Furyk's 12 under par 58 on a par 70 course better than Al Geiberger's or David Duval's 13 under 59s on par 72 courses?
That depends on how you want to see it, but I would say that, you know, to come from a 72 down to a 59, that's really, really, really tough to do. I would say that those are a little tougher to come by than the 12 under that he had on the 70.
I don't want to take anything away from Jimmy Furyk's 58. I think it's a phenomenal, phenomenal thing, okay, to post a 58 on the PGA Tour. Never been done in all the history. All the great players have played seven par 70 golf courses. Ben Hogan, Jack Nicklaus, Arnold Palmer, you name it, Byron Nelson, Sam Snead. Nobody has ever shot a 58. Even in the podunk, you know, little open someplace back when they used to, you know, just get guys to show up and pay them $50, okay? Nobody shot a 58. And Furyk did it on a big boy golf course, even though it was a par 70. But I'm going to put a caveat in here, Carlos. 13 under par beats 12 under par every day. Al Geiberger and David Duval still have something to crow about, even though they got 59 versus Furyk's 58. Matter of fact, Brandel Chamblee addressed it in Golf Digest. He didn't think that Furyk was the best. It's a phenomenal, phenomenal accomplishment. Don't take anything away from Jim. But 13 under par might be 12 under par, maybe. That's good for good discussion around the bar in the evening when you're enjoying the drinks after the round, Carlos.
I couldn't agree with you more, and that's why I said that to me the 72, coming from the 72 and scoring a 13 under sounds better. The thing is that, like you said, you don't want to take anything away from Jim and his achievement. Like you mentioned, nobody else has done it. Everybody has had a chance, and nobody else has done it, so he did it, and kudos to him. But I think, you know, coming from 72 to get to 59, it's really, really, really tough to do. But, hey, kudos to him. And he's in the history books. No matter what happens, now he was the first one to ever do it. Nobody else, like you mentioned, none of the great ones did it.
And he was the guy that had a 59 and now had a 58. So he's had them both. Mm-hmm. So he's been there. So
he's been there, done it. Hey, but there was action also across the pond where England's Anthony Wall beat Alec Norén of Sweden by one hole to win the Aberdeen Asset Management Paul Laurie Match Play at Archfield in East Lothian. Anthony Wall, he last won on the European Tour back in 2000. It was the Alfred Dunhill Championship in South Africa. He has played in 431 events since then before recording this, his second victory on the circuit. Wall's wait for a second win is the longest in European Tour history, surpassing by far the previous high of 236 set by Christy O'Connor Jr. Walt recovered from a sluggish start in the final at the Archfield and eventually secured a one-up win over favorite Alex Noren, a five-time European Tour winner, who was a combined 19 under par for the front nine over the first five rounds and made another flying start in the final despite strong winds making conditions tricky. The Swede narrowly missed out on a Scottish double following his victory in the Aberdeen Asset Management Scottish Open at Castle Stewart last month. In the final three holes, both players got up and down for the birdie at the drivable 16th and at the short 17th. Noren saw his birdie effort lip out as Wall kept his nose in front, but it was Wall who made par at the long finishing hole, but Noren missed his birdie effort from 15 feet as he failed to force extra holes. The 41-year-old Wall, who finished as a runner-up seven times between victories, said, and I quote, "It's fine. The other one in 2000 felt like it was yesterday," end of quote. England's James Morrison won the third-place playoff 4-2 against compatriot Oliver Fisher after starting with a run of birdie, eagle birdie to establish a lead he will never relinquish. Fred, tournament host Paul Laurie was delighted with how the tournament panned out and is positive about the future of the event. Unfortunately, this year, many of the big names that could have been there are either resting at home because of the absurd CK excuse or are on their way to the Olympics.
Yeah, there wasn't. It was not a big name field, but that doesn't take away. It was a nice match play event. And he'll probably get some bigger names back there next year. You know, he comes in at a good time. It just was unfortunate, you know, the way things fell with the Open Championship, the PGA, and the Olympics, and then the FedEx Cup coming. So it just didn't work out for Paul this year getting names. But it's a nice tournament. I got to see a little bit of it, and there were some pretty good matches there. Hey, Carlos, the Champions Tour was up north this weekend. Joe Durant and Miguel Angel Jimenez both ended regulation play, tied, and went to a playoff to decide the winner in the 3M Championship. The playoff didn't take too long, as Durant smoked his long iron second shot to 12 feet, made the eagle to beat Jimenez birdie for the win. Durant had one previous win, and that was in partnership with Billy Andrade at the Bass Pro event. He said, "I was beginning to wonder if I was ever going to win one. And after Friday's round, when I shot 2-under, I didn't think it was going to be this weekend either. I've been knocking on the door, but those doubts start creeping in your mind, even if you could ever shoot low enough for 3 days to do it. So I'm very thankful. I'm fortunate to win this week." Durant opened with a 70, shot 64 on Saturday to begin the final round, four strokes back of Jimenez. Durant made six birdies on the front, added two more on the back, but a bogey at the par 3 13th sent him back before he bounced back with birdie on par 4 14th. Jimenez held the solo lead heading into Sunday's final round. He's let a couple of wins slip out of his hands over the last couple months. 2 weeks ago at Carnoustie in the Senior Open Championship, he took a four-stroke lead in the last day, only shoot 75 and tied for third, three strokes behind the winner. But playing just part-time on the Champions Tour, Jimenez finished in the top five in his last six events, and his worst finish was T11 in the season opening event in Hawaii. Durant's had a pretty good year. He's had seven top tens this season on the Champions Tour and moves to number two in the Charles Schwab Cup. But he's still over 700,000 behind Bernhard Langer, Carlos.
he will be good at this before his career is over. Maybe he will be the one supplanting Bernhard Langer in the long run. We'll see. Hey, Wesley Bryan. He won the Digital Ali Open in a playoff Sunday to earn an immediate PGA Tour promotion as a three-time winner this season on the Web.com Tour. The 26-year-old former South Carolina player became the 21st three-time winner in a season in Tour history and the 11th to earn a three-victory promotion and the first since Carlos Ortiz did it in 2014. Bryan, who was known for his trick shot videos with his brother George prior to qualifying for the Web.com Tour, will now move up to the PGA Tour for the rest of the season. He decided last year it was time to focus on tournament golf, and it has paid off. He also won the Louisiana Open and El Bosque Mexico this year and will be fully exempt for next year in the PGA Tour. Bryan closed with a 4-under 67 to match Grayson Mirror and JT Poston at 20-under 264 at Nicklaus Golf Club at Lionsgate. Mirror and Poston each shot 66. But Brian won with a birdie putt on the par 3 18th, hitting a 6-iron from 194 yards to 3 feet, a shot he called, and I quote, "definitely the best shot of my career," end of quote. The three match birdies at the par 4 18th on the first extra hole, but it was him who earned the $117,000 with the win to push his tour leading total to $449,392. Zach Fisher, Andrew Young, Eric Axley, Andrew Putnam, and Roger Sloan tied for fourth at 19 under. So, Fred, great win by Wesley Bryan, and hey, welcome to the PGA Tour for him.
Yeah, for the rest of the season, which is like two events, but he'll be exempt for next year. That's great for him.
You remember what happened to Carlos Ortiz? He did it in the last one, so he did.
Yeah. And he has struggled since he came up on the PGA Tour. But Wesley Bryan looks to me like a real player. I mean, anybody can do the kind of stuff they were doing with a golf club in their videos. I mean, their videos amaze me. I watched several of them, and they are very, very cool. Those guys are really talented. Hey, Carlos, really happy to talk about the U.S. Women's Amateur. I don't know if golf fans watch this, but it is really good stuff. If you're a golf fan and you're not watching, like the U.S. Women's Amateur and the junior tournaments and some of this stuff, you're really missing out because it's really golf in its purest form. They're not playing for a bunch of money. These are young people playing because they like the competition and they like to play golf. You know, I got to watch most of the final match on television on Sunday. It was held at Rolling Hills just outside of Philadelphia. I was interested because I was familiar with one of the young women, Virginia Elena Carta, who was in the final. But Carlos, mark down the name, Yun Jong Song. You can mark it down right now. She's yet another young Korean that is making a name for herself in the world of golf at the tender age of 16. She defended her U.S. junior girls title this year for her second consecutive junior win. And she added the U.S. women's amateur title via the one-up win over the Duke sophomore, Virginia Elena Carta from Italy. Carta was the NCAA one division individual champion. And she finished T47 here in Toledo at the Marathon Classic last month. A friend of mine caddied for her here in Toledo and alerted me to watch her. There's sufficient drama on the second nine or the second 18, and especially the back nine on Sunday, as Carta experienced either dehydration or overheating, something. She was attended by the medical staff, took a break of about 15, 20 minutes, and after the 12th hole, she was able to finish the match, but she was kind of walking around like she was in a fog there for a couple holes. Nevertheless, Song went into 18, one up, and she drained about a 45-foot curling putt at the last for the win. Song is still in high school. She has a very bright future ahead. She was impressive growing through the field of the best women amateurs in the world. You know what, I think Michael Wan's going to have another decision to make. If Miss Song petitions for LPG Tour membership, you know we're going to be seeing her out on the tour before very long, Carlos.
Definitely. Mark it down. He said it today. He's going to be watched from now on by us and bring anything that happens with her. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to start right with the Par 5 news, so don't go away.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for the Par 5 news. And, Fred, you're going to take the tee shot. And last week, there was nothing bigger than Nike's exit from the golf equipment industry, and then GolfNet considering bankruptcy. So you're going to tell us everything about it. And I started this hashtag called Nike Exit. So tell us all about it.
Yeah, well, of course, and you mentioned it. The biggest news last week, other than Jim Furyk's 58, was the announcement by Nike that they are shutting down their golf club and golf ball business. They will continue to manufacture golf apparel and shoes. And then on top of that, Carlos, retailer Golfsmith announced that it's considering bankruptcy. With one of the big four, now the big three club manufacturers, TaylorMade is up for sale, Titleist is nearing an IPO, with Nike getting out, there's just some great big shakeups in the golf equipment business. You know, Nike says it will keep its apparel and shoe business, but lost 8.2% last quarter, and they've had about as much fun as they can stand in the golf equipment business. We're going to talk more about these events in the VIG section tonight when we interview Ed Travis, an equipment expert. He wrote an excellent piece entitled One Less Slice of Pie and posted in the aposition.com last week. He will give us more insight into the shrinking golf business. It was reported by several news outlets last week that Golfsmith may be seeking bankruptcy proceedings while it looks for a new owner. The 150-store chain based in Austin, Texas, has reportedly hired a firm to solicit buyers but has not had any success to this point. A sale could come as part of a Chapter 11 filing. A Canadian group of stores, Golftown, merged with Golfsmith in 2012 to create one of the largest specialty golf retailers in the world. OMERS, which is a private equity, is part of the Ontario, Canada Municipal Employees Pension Fund, owns both brands. Hopefully, Canadians' retirement plans aren't hurt too badly by this. But on the bright side, Callaway stock surged after Nike's announcement, so there is that. And I guess, Carlos, one person's loss is another person's gain.
Totally agree with that. And something's going on, and we'll wait for Ed to clear it up for us and try to make some sense of all this, but definitely doesn't speak well for the state of golf at this moment. Hey, the deadline to make the teams for the Ryder Cup is rapidly approaching, and players are in a mad dash to make the teams. Take, for example, Matthew Fitzpatrick and Shane Lowry, who have altered their schedules to go all in to qualify for the Euro Cup Ryder team. Let's start with Fitzpatrick, who made late additions to his schedule in an attempt to secure his place on the European team for the Ryder Cup before the Aberdeen Asset Management Paul Lowry match play this past weekend. The Sheffield-based 21-year-old was occupying the ninth and final automatic spot by virtue of his place on the world's points list, with just 28 points ahead of Denmark's Søren Kjelsen. So in addition to this past weekend, he will also be playing the Czech Masters, the Made in Denmark, and the Omega European Masters, four tournaments in succession to maintain his advantage. And that strategy is paying off. He drew a first-round matchup against Ryder Cup vice-captain Thomas Bjorn for the match play opening round at Archfield, and he was hopeful to be able to give the Dane a close-up view of what he's capable of. Well, I think he did pretty well because he blitzed up to a 6-up lead after the first nine and then held on to win 4-3. He went on to win against Matt Ford 6-5 before being derailed by Alexander Ocanizares 4-3. That effort was good enough to move him from 9th to 6th on the rankings. Now he must maintain that momentum, but best of all, Thomas Bjorn got a good whipping and good look firsthand of him and what he can do. As for Lowry, he's currently sitting at number 14, so he has his work cut out for him. He expressed his feelings about it in a publication he made personally for the Irish Times. I'm going to read the key points of it to you. So let's start with quoting, "All my eggs are going in the Ryder Cup basket. If Darren Clark picked me, I feel I would perform. I certainly know I'm good enough. Qualifying for and hopefully playing in the Ryder Cup means so much to me that I have ripped up my tournament schedule for the next month and made a completely new one. It means that I've decided not to play in the Barclays Championship, the first of the FedEx Cup playoffs. Instead, I have added to my itinerary the Windham Championship on the PGA Tour and the Made in Denmark tournament on the European Tour. I haven't made this decision lightly, but I've decided that making the Ryder Cup team at Heseltine is my priority. Some might see it as a drastic measure, but I see it as showing Captain Darren Clark just how much the Ryder Cup means to me. I'm giving myself a chance to qualify by right, by adjusting my schedule, and if that doesn't happen, then hopefully I'm putting myself in the frame for a pick. I'm giving myself two shots at it, really. End of quote. There you have it. Two players going all in to make the Ryder Cup teams. Fred, this could go two ways. Either they focus on playing incredibly well, achieving their goals, and becoming big-time players by that on the team, or the pleasure of making the team gets to them and they fall in doing so. Lowry's one of the most, the one with the most pressure, I would say, and I'm afraid something like the implosion that happened at the US Open could finally happen to him again. I think they're two great competitors, and I will enjoy watching their efforts this next 3 weeks.
Carlos, you know, we talked a little bit about this last week in our practice range segment, and this thing is getting muddier and muddier for Darren Clark by the minute. You know, you got a lot of young guys that are going to make the European Ryder Cup team. You got Matthew Fitzpatrick, you got Andy Sullivan, Chris Wood does not have a lot of experience. Tyrell Hatton is right there. So, you know, he really is going to need some experienced people, but now he's got Russell Knox, who's got two wins on the PGA Tour this year and coming off a win just like right now. How can you pass him up? You got Shane Lowry that played great in the U.S. Open. He's had a really good summer. And then on down the way, you got Sergio, Justin Rose, and you still got Lee Westwood in the mix. So I'm counting 5-6 guys there for three spots. Somebody's going to come up on the short end, Carlos.
Well, just to clarify, Sergio and Justin are in the team as of right now. So it would be either for those three spots, we're talking about right now, like you mentioned, Russell Knox, Shane Lowry, Kjeldsen, Martin Kaymer, and Lee Westwood and Tyler Hatton. So six guys that he has really to pick three of them. And he has already five rookies on the top nine right now. So like you mentioned, those three should be veterans, but what he's going to do, because he has also Tyler Hatton playing well, Russell Knox is playing awesome. Like you said, this is a pickle for him.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, Carlos, you know, we keep kicking around every year. We keep kicking around this slow play thing. Spectators at the Rico Women's Open Championship at Woburn were confused with the big gaps between some groups last week. As much as 15 to 20 minutes, it seems some of the girls were taking too much time over shots, and the Ladies European Union, who administers the tournament, had to get involved. Slow play at the Women's British Open it receives penalty shots rather than fines as they do on the LPGA Tour, so they take it a little more seriously. The players were not happy with the referees because they had to try to hurry them up. The referees were not happy about having to do the hurrying up part. There was a lot of yelling back and forth. In fact, Chrissy Kerr and Sandra Gal confronted officials in the scoring area, and heated arguments with raised voices could clearly be heard. Hometown girl Charlie Hall's play was noticeably affected when she was put on the clock on two different occasions. Another case of paralysis by analysis happened right here in the U.S. Women's Amateur that I was watching, and the young lady I mentioned, Virginia Aleta Carta, and her caddy at the U.S. Women's Open, they were extremely slow during the play and in the matches, and she was constantly being put on the clock. She finally, it came to her attention, and she didn't even realize it, to be quite honest with you, but she had a discussion Saturday night with her coach from Duke, and what he told her really speeded up her play in the finals on Sunday. It really made a big difference, but she's such an emotional player, and she ended up becoming dehydrated, overheated, and lost the match. In match play especially, in the semis and the finals, should time even matter? I'm sorry. I know TV makes a big deal about this. Media makes a big deal about it. I don't get it. If I'm out there playing that match, you know, slowing my opponent down may be a strategy. I don't want to give that away. So in big-time tournament play, Carlos, I just cannot understand the problem with slow play. You know, we had the problem with Morgan Pressel a couple of years ago playing in the match play. She was fined or penalized because of slow play, lost a hole or something. You know, to rush players in match play especially, it's just to take one of the factors away from the match. And rushing never seems to help anyone except maybe, well, old Lanny Watkins or Branch Snedeker. They like to play the dead run. But the ones who seem to complain most about slow play are the media types. And why does anyone want to listen to them anyhow, Carlos?
Well, I'm for one, I'm going to take the other side.
Okay.
I do think it's a cancer, this slow play thing. And it affects every professional tour around the world. And you know, even though a variety of methods have been implemented in a bit to resolve the issue, it's really not happening. And I think that they shouldn't be worrying about if it's equal to everyone. Hey, everyone's going to play on the same clock. Everyone's going to same pace. It's going to be equal for everybody. So it's not affecting anyone as well. It's just a thing, like everything is going to be something that is going to take a little while to be accepted and being part of it. But, you know, five players were given penalties by the European Tour after the first three events where that policy was implemented. And right now they're getting used to it there. You know, it's just something you call those that take that long time, they're diplomatically described as being methodical or deliberate. But, you know, those inordinate waiting times in the tee boxes for greens or fairways to clear sometimes really, really gets to some players. I know that there's some that wouldn't say it, but I know for a fact there's some players that have said slow play is really, really affecting. So I think that as long as it's equal to everybody, there shouldn't be any problem. And as well, right now there's one thing that everybody keeps saying, that golf tournaments and the rounds take so long to play, and the media has to complain because they want everybody to be watching, and that affects the viewership, and you're going to get people that are going to get tired, you're going to get drops and all that. So not everybody has all that time to watch all that round. So making it a little quicker would be good for everybody. So, you know, that's where my take is on the other side. But anyway, keeping going now, I have some players' updates. I'm going to start with in the autumn of 2010, he started working with the exercise physiologist Dr. Steve McGregor. I'm talking about Rory McIlroy. A few months later, after shooting a record-breaking 16 under par, he won the U.S. Open by impressive 8-shot stroke margin. He rocketed to the world number one and achieved major success, becoming the heir apparent to Tiger Woods. So when you go this far as winless this season on the PGA Tour, he had to recently defend his workout regimen when asked about it by the Telegraph. He had to say this at the Third Space Gym in London, and I quote, "I just have to say, look at who I was and where I was as a golfer in 2010. I started training in September 2010, and look at me now. Since I started training, I've won four majors and go to the world number one, so it can only help." End of quote. You know, I don't think Rory's problems are physical right now, and everybody would like to make a case about that. Look at what has happened to Tiger Woods after he built himself up. Look what happens and to so many players that get injured. So it's natural for the media to question that. But I don't think his problems are physical. He has to question his mindset. He's not handling the media pressure like he used to, of course. Winning doesn't help. Well, not winning doesn't help. But that is when you excel and you show how good you really are as a player and as a person. I refuse totally to think as Rory, as this selfish guy who blasted the Olympics and said he's not about going the game of golf. I don't think so. I think he seems to be having problems of some sorts that we don't know of. He's just snapping so easily. Hopefully he can sort them out and get back to being the Rory that he was soon and become another winning player and winning majors again. But hey, one guy that is rising up quickly is former world number one amateur John Rahm. who is on the verge of joining Elite Fraternity. In the history of the tour, only 8 players have successfully earned their card directly out of college, and the list includes some high-profile names: Tiger Woods, Phil Mickelson, Jordan Spieth, and Justin Leonard. Less than 2 months into his pro career, Rahm is on the verge of smashing the odds and adding his name to the list after accepting special temporary membership on tour. This new designation allows him to take unlimited sponsor exemptions for the remainder of the season in an effort to earn membership for next season. He has earned 382 FedEx Cup points and $868,008. And with that, he will earn his card for next season if he can equal or surpass number 125 on either of the league's seasons at end. His current totals would rank him 130th on the FedEx Cup points list and 104 on the money list. So if he is able to sustain at least the money list, he will have earned that tour card for next season. It's very probable. Some players, you know, stay on the course and eventually make it to the tour, but he, on the other hand, is blazing his own trail while joining the growing list of 20-somethings that are changing the space of the face of the sport. He will have starts now on the John Deere this weekend and Windham the weekend after, so furthering his chances of achieving this. And finally, one that is going totally the opposite way and was expected to go moving forward is the reigning U.S. amateur and NCAA individual champion Bryson DeChambeau. 4 months ago, he was the toast of golf. He made a splash at the Masters, hovering around the leaderboard for most of the weekend as an amateur. The following week, the SMU product made his pro debut in style. He finished fourth at the RBC Heritage. These performances, combined with his cerebral and analytical approach to the game and unique equipment and wardrobe arsenal, made him a fascinating study. Many around the game, including me, wondered, was this the next phase of golf? Well, while he certainly has a promising future, the recent present hasn't been so bright. After Hilton Head, he missed 4 straight cuts. He had flashes of brilliance at the U.S. Open, leaving Oakmont with a respectable 15th place finish. However, he's produced nothing of merit since, finishing 64th at the Quicken Loans National, missing the cut at the RBC Canadian Open and Travelers this past weekend, marked his 12th start on the PGA Tour this season. By rule, non-tour members are allowed just 12 appearances per year. Theoretically, DeChambeau, by not earning the special temporary membership that John Rahm did, couldn't bestow invitations to the John Deere Classic this weekend and the Windham Championship the next one. He was going to be able to play on the John Deere Classic and the Windham through Monday qualifiers, as that would not count towards the 12 appearances. Because of FedEx Cup points accumulated, he will also be entered into the Web.com Tour Finals, which is a series of 4 events. The Web.com Tour Finals awards tour cards to the top 25 finishers that haven't earned their cards from the circuit's regular money list. Fred, he didn't qualify yesterday for the John Deere. He still might play next Monday to qualify for the Windham, but if I were the Chambo, I would not play the Windham qualifier. Go back home, train well and hard for Web.com Tour Finals, which offer him the best platform to gain entry to the PGA Tour.
Well, I would disagree with you a little bit there. I would try to Monday qualify, which he did for the John Deere. I think he just missed it by 1 stroke. I mean, he was right there. He just missed it, I think. He might as well try and Monday qualify for the Windham. He's a good enough player. I mean, he has a possibility of winning or maybe even finishing runner-up, which would give him enough money to then have his card. So he might as well try to Monday qualify. He's going to have some time off during the FedEx Cup playoffs. He'll have plenty of time to practice. He needs to get more reps. He obviously just needs to play a little bit more under the tour pressure kind of thing, because he's obviously talented enough. But if he'd happen to get hot, you can see, I mean, if you can play well in the U.S. Open, you can play well in the Masters, you can play well in these other events. It's just your mind gets to wandering or something just happened, and he needs to learn to focus a little bit better. So I'll disagree with you on that one, Carlos. I think if he can, he might as well try to Monday qualify. You just never know. Lightning may strike. One last story here tonight in the Par 5 News. Maria Stackhouse, we're talking about young players, and Maria Stackhouse is really a young player to watch on the LPGA Tour. She had a stellar career at Stanford and has been a standout amateur for several years. She played in her first tournament at the age of 6 and tied for first among a field of 9-year-olds. 50% her age, 50% more older than her. I mean, she's only 6, she's 9-year-old. Her college career at Stanford included 4 years as an All-American, and she helped the Cardinal to win an NCAA title in 2015, as well as finish runner-up this year. She's qualified for the U.S. Women's Opens and made the cut in LPGA Tour events. In 2011, at the age of 17, she became the youngest African-American woman to earn a spot in the field at the U.S. Open. In 2014, she became the first African-American woman to make the Curtis Cup team, which the United States won that year. She played in her inaugural LPGA Tour event as a professional at the Cambia Portland Classic a few weeks ago. She made the cut, and she earned $4,900 with a T47 finish. Stackhouse, it was announced this week that she will join Phil Mickelson and Stacey Lewis as the only KPMG-sponsored golfers. With her new sponsorship deal in place, the Sumatra Tour announced that it would extend Mariah exemptions into 5 tournaments for the remainder of the season to try to work her way into the top 10 to earn an LPGA Tour card for next year or at least to practice for Q School coming up later this year, Carlos. Maria Stackhouse, she's going to be someone to watch. She's put her 4 years in college. She didn't take the early route like Lydia Ko and Aria Jutanagarn and Brooke Henderson. She's a sharp young lady. She's got a degree from Stanford. She's gonna do all right, Carlos.
Oh, she is, and watch for her. Right, that name also. She's the greatest amateur and now on the Sumatra Tour. Watch out. She'll soon be on the LPGA Tour. Hey, let's take another short break. When we come back, we have what you've been waiting for, and I have been waiting for it for 7 years. It's a preview for golf's return to the Olympics. Don't go away.
Thank you for listening to the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. We'll be right back. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for the practice range where every week Fred and I pick a topic and each of us take our shots at it, and that's why we call it a practice range. And this week, finally, it's here. We've been talking about this forever, it seems like. But, hey, it's finally here, you know, that in the months and weeks ahead of golf's return to the Olympics, it seemed all that could be heard was doom and gloom. Adam Scott wasn't going. He was the first to say it. Then later, Rory McIlroy, Jim Spieth, and Jason Day, Dustin John pulled out. And Dusty Johnson only pulled out, as well as most of the top South African golfers, a lot of people, Hideki Matsuyama, I mean, 22 in total. The course was also late and largely untested and faced lots of environmental concerns. Golfers were also going to be the most likely to track Zika virus, apparently, because since they were outside all day, although, you know, I don't know, not one worker building the course and maintaining it since has tested positive. Just saying. I don't know. But anyway, others also blame the format. You know, that's newsy 4 rounds of individual medal play that is possibly the least exciting, least enticing way to showcase the sport. But then again, how else would you want to showcase a sport that plays that way with just a few exceptions? I mean, do you want to be the only sports in the Olympics that changes its format, trying to get people just to watch it and play it, but then when they go to see the tournaments and play them, it's not the way that you showcase them in the Olympics. Yeah, that's very smart. But anyway, but finally, on Thursday, all these black eyes and hiccups will disappear. After 112 years, golf will officially be back in the Olympics. And an unforgettable experience is awaiting golfers in Rio. Instead of who isn't there, which I don't care right now, the focus will be on who is, and the lineup is still impressive. Open champion Henrik Stenson, who says, I'm not afraid of mosquitoes. I'm more afraid of bears, you know, which they're not there. So he was just being sarcastic about it. Masters winner Danny Willett, Jonathan Vegas, who won the RBC Canadian Open, Americans Bubba Watson, Ricky Fowler, Matt Kuchar, and Patrick Reed are all there. So too are Sergio Garcia, Justin Rose, Martin Kaymer. You know, the attendance of Canadians Graham DeLay and David Hearn was never in doubt. They are on badge flag waivers who were, I don't know if you saw it, in front and center with the Canadian team during Friday evening's opening ceremonies. That was hilarious. I mean, you could see them. Already, they are expressing amazement with their experience, being almost overwhelmed by being Olympians. I don't know. I have been following the tweets and everything because I just want to keep this and say everything that they – everything is going as I expected. Great. And Graham DeLay, he tweeted, and I quote, "It's really sad that there has been so much negative press about the Olympics and golf in particular. Nothing but top class," end of quote. You know, next week, the women will arrive with a pretty much a full lineup of the GameStop players, which includes Leah Ko, Brooke Henderson, Abby Yatanar, Indy Park, and Lexi Thompson. The Gil Hans design course has also received praise by the players who have teed up so far. So contrary to early rumors, reports say that isn't overrun by capybaras or rattlesnakes. You know, this is not the desert or is not a – this is a country really – I don't know. I just want to leave it there. But anyway, it's a challenging layout with a sandhill feel with a nice finish of a short par 4, a short par 3, and a reachable par 5. Those are the last three, and it's going to make for a great finish there at the Olympics. It's receiving great and constant great praised by the players there. Oh, and thanks to some constant breezes, you know, the mosquitoes are non-existent. Maybe they've flown away to Florida since it's winter in the southern hemisphere. So now it's about two things, golf and the Olympics. The golf, well, it will take care of itself. I mean, the combination of great players and a wonderful course has set a great foundation. It's the Olympic part that will light the fuse, however. For those who have never been, the games are bigger than any sporting event, bigger than the Masters, bigger than the Open Championship. It's not that the golf event will be more important or dwarf, say, the U.S. Open, okay? But golf is just one part of what happens at sport's biggest stage, which is the Olympics. And when golfers who decided to play get swept up in the fact that they are part of a larger team, it will likely infuse them with something they've never experienced before, and we've seen them. You just have to read what Bubba Watson and Ricky Fowler have been saying. It's unfortunate because golf may not survive past 2020 in Tokyo, where the tall foreheads who run the extravaganza decide if it can stay or stay as part of the family. The damage may have already been done in that regard. It's unfortunate that some interest blind people and don't let them see the real opportunity there is to grow the game. Yes, there is an opportunity to grow the game. And what could be a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for the participants? But for now, for this week and the next, for the men and women who will tee it up and play as Olympians representing their countries, it's an experience they will never forget. Hopefully, Fred, the viewers won't either as soon as Alisson da Silva from Brazil, none other, is going to take the first shot. The first tee shot is going to be there on Thursday. So I'm looking so forward to it.
Yeah, Carlos, you just, I mean, you touched all the bases there, buddy. You did a great job wrapping that thing up. And we've been talking about the Olympics, as you mentioned, we've been talking about it all year, all the negative press, all the negative stuff. And it doesn't matter now who's not there. It's just about the guys that are there, that want to be there, that are going to play. You were telling me before we came on air, the course is getting really good reviews from the players there. I have not heard that. I haven't seen it. I haven't read that yet. But, yeah, after all the withdrawals, the bad publicity, the Zika concerns, and the political unrest, it's finally going to get underway this week. I'm really tired of talking about it. I'm really tired of being negative about it. I hope it is positive. I hope it's great. I watched Ricky March in the opening ceremonies, you know, while Bubba and Patrick and Cooch were in Hartford making a buck. You know, the fields are not deep. We were talking a little bit about that. You know, the women's field, you've got the people that matter, Lydia Ko, Brooke Henderson, and Ariyo Jitanagarn, they're there. It would be great if it would come down to those three on the last day. Wouldn't that be fantastic if they'd be in like a final group or something? On the men's side, I was telling you, you know, I look down, I can maybe go down to about number 17 or 18 of guys that really have a legitimate chance to win. At the top of the chart, you got Bubba, you got Henrik Stenson, Ricky Fowler, Danny Willett, Justin Rose, Sergio, Patrick Reed, Matt Kuchar. That's the top eight, and those are the really big names. You do have Emiliano Grillo, who's had a pretty good year, David Lindmerth, who's a really solid golfer. I mean, this should be a good golf course for him. He might be a guy to really watch this week, because nobody has the edge on the course because nobody knows the golf course. And Lindmerth does a really good job of keeping the ball in front of him, keeping it in play. And if he can putt a little bit this week, he may be a real guy to watch. Martin Keimer's been playing good of late. So, you know, it's not a very deep field. There's only 60 players in the field for the men. So, you know, we talk about the Masters being the easiest major to win because it's a smaller field and because there are some amateurs and some invited people there. So it's not as deep. It's the same way here. These top players should really have an advantage because they're head and shoulders above a lot of the other people. Just a couple side notes here that the Russian lady that you talked about last week, maybe not getting to be able to come to the Olympics, did get cleared to play. So she is going to be in the field next week in the women's competition. It is 72-hole, four-round stroke play format. I mean, that's what they play every other week of the year, so why not play it there? The tee times, I've got the tee sheet here. Looking down at some of the groupings, a couple that catch my eye. Danny Willett is playing with Matt Kuchar and then a Chinese person. You've got Bubba Watson playing with Martin Keimer and Lahiri from India. You've got Sergio playing with Patrick Reed and Emiliano Grillo. That should be a really good group. The winner could come from that group, actually. I that would not surprise me if a Patrick Reed or a Sergio win this thing either. You've also got at the tail end, 10:58. Tee time is Ricky Fowler, Justin Rose, and Johnny Vegas. And then the last tee time is Henrik Stenson, Pongtai Jaidee, and Rafa Cabrera-Bello. So there are some good groupings. There's four or five good groups that you're going to watch and names that you'll know. There's going to be a lot of people that you don't know from different countries around the world that did qualify. So, you know, there's a lot of people that have weighed in on this thing. Ron Green Jr. has a really nice piece in the Global Golf Post this week that came out yesterday about the Olympics. ESPN's Scott Van Pelt did a scathing job on the Olympic golf. He says it's a disaster. Of course, ABC and ESPN don't have any TV coverage there, so I imagine that has something to do with it. But there's all kinds of stuff out there you can read. And, Carlos, you did a fantastic job of wrapping it up, and there's not much more that I can add for the Olympics. So I'm going to let it go with that, buddy. I know you're excited. I hope it turns out well.
I'm sure it will. I mean, and I would look forward, if you want to see somebody, you know, just tell you here, the TV schedule Thursday is going to be 6:30 a.m. to 3 p.m. On the Golf Channel. As well on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, they're going to have some coverage of that. The tee times, like you mentioned, is going to be 6:30 a.m. the first one until 10:59. Tell something, 10, I'll tell you right now. 10:09 will be the last one where you mentioned Bubba Watson. And there I would look forward to especially Sergio, Ricky Fowler, Henrik Stenson, Bubba, Patrick Reed, the Canadians, Delay, and David Hearn, the ones that have been all wrapped up about it. And in this course, for what I've read, and I tell you, I've been especially reading everything that I can about the golf because I just want to see if it's true, that doom and gloom that has been said about the golf there, and especially the Olympics. Nothing's happened. Nothing will happen. But anyway, I tell you, those people that really wanted to be there, look forward to them. I hope and I think, you know, this is a tournament that fits Sergio a lot, and I would love for him, if he doesn't get a major, get at least a gold medal here. Looking forward to that. And, hey, the women's next week, great tournament. All the top, they do get it. They do know there is some marketing and some branding opportunities to grow the game as well, you know. And they are there. They are there, and that's the way it should have been. I only want to finish by saying, you know, I blame maybe not the players. I know the players do what they have been taught and what they are accustomed to. Okay? The tours. If you follow what the LPGA did, they prepared the ladies to go there to the Olympics. Their European Tour and the PGA Tour never, ever, during this past 7 years, took the initiative to put the importance that the Olympics are for golf. Okay, it's their fault. If they would have done like the LPGA did and do a better way with the schedule, better work with it, and prepare them and starting to get the chance to, hey, really, we have to grow again. Why the heck did you request it to be back there in the Olympics if you were not going to give that effort? That's where I really all my anger is, everything is going towards the PGA Tour and the European Tour, not as much as the players, because they do what they've been taught to do for the past 120 years. So anyway, enjoy. I'm certainly going to be enjoying it and looking forward to it. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to have Ed Travis, golf writer, equipment reviewer, and travel expert, who will be on hand to answer what's happening, trying to make some sense of what's going on in the wide, wide world of the golf equipment industry. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Thank you for listening to the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. We'll be right back. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for our VIG, very important guest of the week. And, like I said, his name is Ed Travis. You know, he's a national award-winning golf journalist and has had a lifelong affair with the game. He has competed in tournament golf both as an amateur and as a senior professional. And through his competitive days are behind him, he still plays regularly and carries a handicap of 2, and his wife lives in suburban Orlando. Fred, I believe that Travis, like I mentioned, a golf writer, equipment reviewer, and travel expert, is in hand to answer what wide, wide world is going on with the golf industry, right?
Yeah, exactly. I've known Ed for a few years, and he's an equipment expert. So he's the perfect person to help sort out this mess of announcements concerning Nike, TaylorMade, Adams, Titleist, and now the retailer Golfsmith. In this declining market and all these kind of things. So he has a really good handle on it. He's been doing it for a long, long time. He knows all the players. He knows all the ins and outs. And he can give us a little bit of insight. He shared some really good insight in the interview, Carlos.
Okay, let's play that interview with Ed Travis.
Ed Travis is a longtime golf writer, equipment examiner, and golf travel expert. He currently contributes equipment and travel reviews for theaposition.com. He recently posted a new article to the A Position entitled One Less Slice to the Pie, addressing the current shakeups in the equipment industry. Plus, he's a pretty fair golfer in his own right. And we're really happy to have him on the Back Nine Report. Ed, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Fred. Very nice to visit you.
With the recent announcement of Nike discontinuing their equipment line. Of course, TaylorMade and Adams are on the selling block, and Golfsmith announced that they're considering bankruptcies. Well, what in the world is going on in the equipment business?
What really is going on is it's a classic consolidation in the market that happens in virtually every industry My background is in newspapers, and it very obviously has happened in the print media business and has been for years. And it's happening in the golf industry for a relatively simple reason, and that is that the number of golfers are declining. And when that happens, there's immense economic pressure. Keep enlarging your slice of the pie. Of course, then it's not coming from new business entering the market. You have to take it away from your competitors. And so everybody's scrambling.
I've tried all the equipment, as I know you have, and I never really did care for Nike clubs, especially the irons, and I never really seemed to like the feel of the woods, the drivers either. And that's not the case. I like Callaway. I've hit pings. I like Titleist. I've had some clubs that I've liked over the years, and I've played TaylorMade for several years. So Nike just didn't seem to have the quality to me personally. Did you see that, or did you like the Nike equipment?
The biggest thing here, Fred, is that it's relative. They made top-quality clubs. Their head of their design department, Tom Stites, is one of the superstars of the industry, very well thought of, been designing clubs and innovating things for years and years. But I think there were two problems as far as Nike was concerned, and these are both perceptual problems, consumer perception problems. One is they seem to rely a great deal on the fact that Tiger Woods was playing their clubs. And I don't think anybody is assuming that they have the characteristics of their swing that would allow them to play the same clubs as Tiger Woods. So that creates a bit of a problem in terms of the marketing that they're doing. The image is great, but the follow-through may be somewhat lacking. But the second thing is they never established themselves as being the club to play, let's say the driver to play, or that their irons were the absolute all-time best in the business, et cetera, et cetera. Obviously, TaylorMade crossed that line a number of years ago and just thoroughly dominated, has dominated, is still dominating the metal wood business, despite all of their problems in recent years. So I think that's what was going on with equipment as far as Nike was concerned. It wasn't that they were making poor quality. It wasn't that the design was poor. It was a case of they couldn't create a dominance in one area, and they, from a marketing standpoint, seemed to depend an awful lot on Tiger. Unfortunately, I don't think either of those strategies was very successful.
With Nike out of the market, who do you think stands the better chance of maybe adding a bigger piece of the pie? Titleist, Callaway, Ping, Bridgestone, maybe Mizuno, maybe somebody else?
Well, I wish I knew, because if I did, there were probably some bets I'd like to lay down. I don't think that there's anybody's got a real clear edge. Obviously, there are some other things going on. Number one, Callaway's on a real roll. Chip Brewer, who was former president of Adams Golf, went over to Callaway 3 or 4 years ago and has them on a real roll. They're making some really good equipment. They've got some really good players, including people like Phil Mickelson playing for them. So it's a very positive thing as far as Callaway's concerned. TaylorMade is in the middle of being sold by Adidas. They've had their problems for the last couple of years. But having said that, the launch of their M1 driver back last fall was the most successful launch for a driver since the Big Bertha back in, I think it was 95, which is just stupefying because, of course, the Big Bertha just overran everybody. TaylorMade sales in the second quarter are up 24%. Acushnet, Titleist, they're in the throes of going public. So there's a lot happening there. I don't know how going public is going to affect their ability to take additional market share because of Nike leaving the business, but it has to have some effect. Now, if you talk about the smaller companies, those three right there, they and Nike were the big four, but now there's the big three. If you get down and you're talking about Bridgestone and Mizuno and Ping, et cetera, they're all excellent companies and make some really good products, but I'm not sure that they've got the the marketing power to get in there and grab that $700+ million worth of sales that Nike was making.
Mix it up with the big boys.
Peter Uihlein, who's a longtime president, chairman of Acushnet, told me years and years ago, and this is going back probably 15 years ago. He said to me, in a very private conversation, this was not an interview, we were just chatting about the state of the business, and he said, you know, the golf industry is shaping up so that there's going to be four players, probably four or five, maybe six people in the middle ground, and then all the small guys. And those four big players, and by that he was meaning himself and TaylorMade, Callaway, and Nike, are going to call the shots. And everybody else is going to have to live within whatever market they create. And that certainly appears to be what's going on. You add that to the consolidation in general of business because of the decline in the number of players, and I think you have a pretty good description of the situation.
Let me ask you a question about a company that's kind of bucking the trend, going their own way. PXG has made a rather big splash. They've got some wins on tour. They've got some high-profile people playing their clubs. They're doing it a little differently, and they have a high price line, $5,000-$7,000 for their set of clubs on the retail market. Is there a place for something like this? What are you seeing?
Another really interesting question, because if you price out a set of PXG, a bag full of them, everything from driver to putter, depending on what options you choose, you come up with over $5,000. It would be my considered opinion, based on no statistical evidence whatsoever, that there's very few people that are going to spend $5,000 for a set of clubs. I don't think they're going to spend $700 for one of their drivers. That's what a driver costs. I just don't see that happening. Having said that, you're exactly correct. They've got some high-profile people, and they may pick up a couple of three of the Nike people. It's very obvious that Bob Parsons, the guy who started this and made his millions of, or billions of dollars in GoDaddy, has a dream. And he's not the first guy to be an avid golfer, have a lot of money, and get into the golf equipment business because he had a dream. Certainly, Carsten Solheim had a dream. He didn't have a lot of money when he got into the business and started paying. Gary Adams, who started TaylorMade Golf, had almost no money and a dream. So that if the components are not all that strange. In recent years, I can't think of anybody, and I did a story about PXG back last fall when they first started announcing all of the stuff that they were going to be doing. And I couldn't come up with anybody that I knew that had come in and thrown a ton of money into the golf business like they're doing and wound up being successful. I could think of a number of them who did it and wound up being unsuccessful. Now, that doesn't mean that Bob Parsons is going to be unsuccessful, but it does mean that he's got a long road to hoe. I don't think the total market that's available to him, that is people who are willing to spend $700 for a driver, $5,000 for a set of clubs in this country, is very large. And so he may be having a strategy that he wants to sell clubs, for example, in the Orient. In Japan, $700 for a driver is nothing.
Yeah.
Drivers in Japan quite often sell for well over $1,000. It's a little early to tell. He's only been at it for a year or so. It's interesting to watch.
And your column, in your article you wrote, Tiger Woods, Rory McIlroy, and Michelle Wee, as well as Paul Casey and rising stars Tony Finau and Brooks Koepka, used the Nike swoosh. Woods has said he is actively looking for a new relationship with a club company, and the most likely candidate could be a Acushnet Titleist. And then to add to that, Ed, with TaylorMade to lose its funding from Adidas and Nike out of the equipment business, other big-name pros are going to be looking for some new sponsorship deals, namely Jason Day, Dustin Johnson, Justin Rose, and Sergio Garcia. So it looks like it's going to be a very active off-season for agents and manufacturers reps trying to get some of these guys to jump ship and try some different names.
But keep a couple of things in mind. Number one, For example, TaylorMade, which does $1 billion a year in sales, builds their marketing efforts around what they call, and every company has a different name for it, but they call it tour validation, meaning having top players on the tour playing their clubs and playing them because they work. TaylorMade's not going to stop marketing. TaylorMade has lots of millions and millions of dollars to spend on tour players. So I don't think they're going to let the big names get away in any other kind of a sense than guys change equipment companies all the while. But what we have to keep in mind is that because of the consolidation of the industry, the pie's not getting any bigger. They're not able to raise prices on clubs because the market won't allow it. Supply and demand doesn't allow it. So the amount of money that's available from manufacturers across the board, from Acushnet down to Joe Blow's putter company, is really restricted, becoming more restricted. And one vice president at one of the big club makers who remain nameless said to me, their budgets for tour players are under close scrutiny. Yes, that was my reaction too.
Yeah.
And of course, he wouldn't give me any details. I think what's going to happen, what you're going to see, in fact, we're starting to see it now, is that players like active players, I'm not so sure about Tiger Woods, but certainly Phil Mickelson, Jason Day, DJ, Dustin Johnson, Sergio, Ricky Fowler, who's with Cobra Golf, they aren't going to be hurt too much in terms of the amount of money that they can claim for their sponsorship. What's going to happen is the guys who are in the second half of the PGA Tour money list, who are playing on the web.com tour, and the ladies on the LPGA Tour are going to get hit. And they're already seeing sponsorship dollars go down in those categories. It started last year, and I see no reason why it shouldn't continue. And so we're going to have a mixed bag. And as you said, there's going to be a lot of interesting things going on.
We've been talking with Ed Travis, a longtime golf writer, equipment reviewer, and travel expert. As I mentioned, he contributes articles to the aposition.com. You can read him there. Ed, certainly glad to finally have you on the show. And when later, maybe this year, after you get some of the new equipment reviewed, we'd like you to come back and we'll talk about what to look for next year. How about that?
My pleasure to be with you today, Fred. And, yes, I would really enjoy visiting with you again.
Thanks a lot, Ed.
Appreciate it.
Well, there you have it. Ed Travis talked about everything you need to know about the golf equipment industry. I mean, he brought in some history, some even off-the-record conversations. I mean, what else can you ask? I think if you didn't like this, wow, now you got all the information you needed, Fred.
Yeah, and like I mentioned earlier, he's been at it for a long time. He knows everybody. He knows all the ins and outs. Every company sends in product every year. He said I talked to him. Matter of fact, Carlos, I cut this down in about half, okay, of what you could probably hear some of the cuts in there. Actually, I was a little rough on him. But he's getting equipment right now sent to him this month to test and try out, and he'll be writing articles and evaluating those. And he's agreed to come back down the road maybe later this year or the beginning of next year and talk about the new equipment. He mentioned a couple things that he's seen already that he really likes that'll be coming on the market that he can't talk about yet. But he's very knowledgeable, and I wanted to get someone on that was an expert in the field to talk about some of this stuff. And it's really, you know, everybody's going to gets excited about Nike going out, but it's really kind of business as usual. It sounds worse than it really is, Carlos. It's just business. We've got a declining market right now, a declining group of golfers. There's less people to buy stuff. More people are more savvy. They're not going to spend $400, $500, $600 for a driver. They're going to wait, buy it 5 or 6 months later on eBay. They've proven that. Retailers are cautious now. TaylorMade scared them off about how much product they're going to take in and how they're going to, what they're going to spend. So it's a whole different ball game right now. It's just a market correction. You know, that's just what it is right now. The go-go years of the 90s and the early 2000s are over. You know, and so it's just a little different market right now in the golf business. Not to say it's a bad thing or a good thing. That's just the way it is, Carlos.
It's a cyclical thing, like everything else. And it would be great, you know, like if we can get him back once all this is sorted out, once we see finally when Acushnet goes public, when Golfsmith, if they really go bankrupt or what they're going to do, and Nike is finally out, how things are playing out. It would be good to see how he thinks about things playing out back then. So we'll see. And one thing that I wanted to mention before we go to the final putts, I got three emails. Okay, three emails that I want to answer for the same question. It was like you that said that you haven't heard about the Olympic golf course being raved about and how the players are. I'm going to just mention two articles for the people. I'm going to publish them in Twitter after the show. But just want to go to golf.com and see an article by Alan Chipnock. It's called "The Olympic Golfers Are Enjoying Themselves in Rio." Yes, really, that's how it's called. There you're going to see everything that they're saying about golf and the course. And the other one was from the Associated Press just today. The other one was yesterday. That is called "An Olympic Golf Course Built for Wind and for Scoring," and that was by Doc Ferguson on the Associated Press. So if those are just two, I'm going to publish them afterwards. And I'm going to try to be publishing everything that I see and read about the positive things, so that everybody, at least if I can do my part on it, to see that not everything was like it was supposed to be, that doom and gloom. Everything is going fine and going great, and as soon as I get anything else, I'll be publishing it for all of you. So thanks to John, to Mary, and to Rosemary, who sent me those emails just after we talked about it in the practice range. Fred, one more short break, and when we come back, we'll have our final thoughts before we close the show. Enjoy.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for final thoughts before we close the show, and I'm going to start talking about Cassie Bryant, the wife of former PGA Tour member and current Champions Tour player Bart Bryant, who was diagnosed on Mother's Day with brain cancer. For 3 months since that fateful day, life has been a blur for the Bryant family. There have been tears, but also the unmitigated hope that comes from love, spirituality, and conviction. Last Monday, Kathy underwent the last of 42 days of chemotherapy at Marilyn Henderson Cancer Center in Houston, and on Thursday, she received her 30th and last radiation treatment. Don't have the latest, but if all went well, later that day, she would have returned home to Orlando, and if all really goes really, really well, Bart Bryant said that his wife is looking forward to joining him at the U.S. Senior Open this week in Columbus, Ohio, where they will be surrounded once again by their dear friends in the PGA Tour Champions family. You have it, the Back Nine Report. Fred and I wish nothing but the best for Kathy and Bart and their family. Be strong and keep the faith in God. Hey, the big boss above. And finally, Andrew Beef Johnston, he received a package and was asked to change his name. The UK chapter of People for Ethical Treatment of Animals issued a release Tuesday saying it had sent a package of tofu steaks and soy sausages to Johnston, the 27-year-old Englishman and enthusiastic carnivore, in hopes that he would consider adopting a vegan diet and changing his name to Tofu. Ah, man, I think there is more chance to rain in hell than that happening, Fred. So Beef said, thanks, but no thanks. Beef is my nickname, and I'm not going to change it.
Yeah, I don't see that happening anytime soon. I don't. Did I tell you I actually got to meet him at the PGA?
Yes, you mentioned.
Yeah, I was talking to Matt Janella, and he came in. It was great. They're old buddies, so that was a lot of fun. Hey, a couple things real quick here. NWO Golf Links ran a piece by Ryan Belangi in the July issue about the history of the lost gold medals from the 1904 Olympics that were found in a box in a home near Cleveland. You can go back and look at the July issue on that. But Teddy Greenstein posted a piece last week in the Chicago Tribune about the winner of that medal, Chandler Egan, and it's worth a read also. It just gives you a little bit more insight into the history and his playing around Chicago area and his life and that kind of thing. And you can find that in the ChicagoTribune.com. And if you just Google Chandler Egan 1904 Olympics, I'm sure that will come up. Steve Eubanks also has an excellent piece about the maturation of Arias Jutanugarn in Global Golf Post. You know, she's playing with so much joy. She's always smiling. You know, she's come back from that injury she suffered in the fall when she was chasing her sister around the golf course. And just a really nice read from Steve Eubanks, who follows the LPGA Tour very closely. And Carlos, I just want to mention that the August issue of NWO Golf Links will be out tomorrow morning. You can find that at nwo.back9mediagroup.com. That's back 9, the number 9, nwo.back9mediagroup.com, NWO Golf Links.
I was just about to tell you to remind everybody about it, so great that you did it.
I remembered, Carlos.
Yes, you did. Well, Back Niners, that wraps up another week of the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. Remember, the Olympics are this week and the next. Golf is returning, yes. Thank you for listening. It's always our pleasure to bring you the latest on the world of golf. Special thanks to our VIG very important guest of the week at Travis. Don't forget to join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Blog Talk Radio, or if you missed it, check it out on iTunes or tune in. And if you haven't done so, do it now. Follow the show on Twitter. Our ID is at Back9Report with the number 9 in the middle. My name is Carlos Torres, along with Fred Alvader. We wish you to be happy, be blessed, and enjoy the great game of golf, especially the return of golf to the Olympics. Happy golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.